be a city. I was a farmer boy, and I decided I didn't want to be a city slicker. And then my granddad said, but that's the hardest way to make a living. Oh, that's just, there's so many now. You can go down to the shoe factory. Wouldn't you like to have a grocery store or a hardware store or a clothing store? I'll help you to get started. He wanted to be, he quit when he was 40 because they had such poor farms, and he finally got a good farm with the help of a brother, and they were very successful. In 7 years, my granddad decided to retire and go to town, and at 40 he did that. And my grandmother never let him get that out of his mind. Just when we were making money, he came to town because he wanted to be a businessman. And so he thought, well, that's what I would like to be, should be a businessman. Well, his uncle, or his son was in the shoe factory and had a successful business and had no male heir, so I was supposed to inherit the shoe factory. So I had to live that down. That's why I struggled so. And then when I finally came home from Chicago, my granddad said, well, now what? And I said, well, I think I'm going to buy a house. And he said, well, every man wants to buy a house. I guess he said, have you got any money? And I said, no, not very much. Well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to go down to the shoe factory. If I could, my uncle would always take me in. And finally, I found a house in Cooksville, and the county was going to sell it for $200. A house built, again, about 46 or 47. And I came up, finally got the house, bought it from the county, paid cash for it. I came home practically out of my mind, of course, and told my granddad, I said, oh, you got to come out. I bought a house. Well, what did you buy? And I said, well, come on, get in the car, we'll go out and see. So he took a look and he said, well, you didn't buy much. And I said, no. I said, it looks pretty bad, but I've looked it all over, and I said, it can be put back again. Well, how much did you pay? And I said, I paid $200. So he kind of laughed, and he said, well, I guess you didn't pay too much. And he said, how much are the taxes? And I said, they're $1.80 a year. So I figured it couldn't be taken away from me as long as I could pay the $1.80. Well, that was a start. That's almost the start of Pendarvis, you see, because then I came over here looking for old building material to restore the house.
And met.
And then we got together, and Bob wanted to restore a house, so I started it up. I wasn't a carpenter either.
You weren't a carpenter?
I'd like to. That's the funny thing. My granddad, I don't know why they didn't say that, why don't you be a carpenter? Because we had a pile of boards and a nail and a hammer and a saw, and my granddad, I'd say, well, can I build a little house? Well, what are you going to build? And I said, well, I'm going to build a hut. So I made one on the side of the house, and one on, and I'd take that down pretty quick. That was pretty much of an eyesore. Then he let me build one on the side of the barn. But then after it stood so long, then I had to take it down. So I had to take it all apart, pull all the nails, and put the boards back again. I would have been a carpenter. I think I'd have made a good carpenter.
Obviously, you are a good carpenter. Everybody says so.
Then I wanted to do rock work, and there wasn't much rock work done in Stoughton. And I had quite a time to find a quarry out near Cooksville for the Cooksville house. I finally bought some rock from the quarry. But then I came over here, of course, and when I got together with old Charlie Curtis, mm-hmm. I was apprenticed to him, mm-hmm. and he was a good teacher. He'd been up at Frank Lloyd Wright, you see, mm-hmm. and so he said, he let me do a whole row of rock. He said, now stand back, my son, and take a look. And I said, oh, my, it looks fine. Well, it's not right, he said. Mm-hmm. So then he'd go and change a stone or two. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, how do you know that? And he said, well, after you laid rock for 40 years, he said, it just sort of comes natural. And I said, but there must be certain rules and regulations. Well, then he told me definitely about breaking the joints. And there again, your own pattern of how you wanted it. He liked to have jumpers. And I kind of like to lay it more like Random Ashler. But I liked all 6-inch or all 8-inch or all 10-inch. Mm. And he would sort of like to break the pattern.
Have a rougher looking. Back to agriculture in Mineral Point. Mr. Penworthy, you say you never had to work on a farm, but your grandfather.
My grandfather had a farm.
How did, was that his living?
Yes, uh-huh.
Was that your mother's father?
Yes, uh-huh.
But they never made you go out there?
No. I was the youngest, next to the youngest of the family, I guess.
Spoiled rotten. I've never heard of a grandson of a farmer who didn't somehow have to do this. You managed to avoid that all those years.
Yeah.
Well, you were lucky.
Yeah.
What kinds of processing plants for agricultural products are there in Mineral Point? Any?
Well, there were the grist mills originally for
grinding the grain flour.
Yeah.
And
when you were boys, was there a flour mill in town that you would?
Yeah, Graber's had one, didn't they? Graber's.
Well, are you thinking in town? I was thinking of the one down there in Shemmings Barn. Wasn't that a? Didn't they have a mill in there, in Doc Shemmings Barn?
Right
next to it, between there and the foundry.
Part of the foundry was. That would be way up the hill a little bit further. That'd be Graber's.
Uh huh. I never knew.
What street was this approximately?
Well, Commerce.
Okay. And did you go there to buy flour?
No, I didn't.
Was it a local brand?
Yeah. I don't know much about it. Do you?
No,
You bought your food at Yikes, I take it.
Yeah.
Did you too, Mr. Neal?
Oh, yes, that was the best store in town. Gosh, we had an old flour mill over in Stoughton that meant, I can still remember it. They were on the river and then they moved up from the river when they didn't use water power.
Hmm.
And they had, I don't know that I can remember the sack, but they bought flour in a cloth sack.
100-pound sacks.
That had a definite label on it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure.
Ubiquitous in Wisconsin. I was wondering whether it occurred here in Mineral Point. It did to some degree, but it wasn't a terribly popular thing. Characterize the farms around here. Were they mostly dairy farms, diversified dairy farming?
Yeah.
Not so much grain growing.
Enough of their own use, perhaps. Uh-huh.
But not as a cash item.
No.
Was a lot of rye or buckwheat grown around here?
No,
was there a prominent local market for currants and the kinds of foods that the Cornish are said to like? I know your tea cakes require currants.
No.
But they don't require currants.
They do require currants.
But there are many black currant bushes on the old properties. And the Cornish, that's a favorite of the Cornish.
Well, the red currants, Edgar.
Pardon?
The red currant.
No, the black currant. And the black currant was blotted out because it carried the host for pine.
And you were same as gooseberry.
You were supposed to destroy the black currant. And then gooseberry, of course, but the gooseberry grew wild.
Oh, that's for every time you got a pasture, you had a gooseberry.
Then everybody had a plum tree, a minor plum tree. Every backyard had to have a minor plum tree for plum preserves.
But they did. But these were not cash crops. These were basically household items. Was there a dairy plant in town that did anything special with cheese, butter? Well, you say a creamery, right, where you were born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you had nothing whatever to do with that. You never called a milkman.
I didn't.
Harry Nord just painted black people with white stripes.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Did Harry Nord work at that creamery?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
What did he do?
Well, he was a butter maker. He learned butter making when he was very young, 14 or 15. He had to go out to work and got to be quite a butter maker.
Yes, he always used to tell me, yes. And churning those huge vats. He says that the easiest thing he ever did was fight in World War II. Regular hours were quite healthy. World War I, wrong one. One of his favorite yarns, as you probably know. Was that the only dairy plant in town? Or were there competing ones?
I don't know.
I can't remember any. Oh, do you remember that creamery up there by
From J. Alley?
Yeah.
Yeah. Porter had it, didn't it?
Who?
Spooner.
Spooner, James Spooner?
Uh-huh. Father.
I can remember that. I used to be sent down to get a
syrup
pail of buttermilk.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Where was your family house, Mr. Neal?
On Maiden Street.
Maiden,
up on the hill.
On Maiden Street, not too far from here.
Yeah, we went on Maiden Street to look at the, I know where it is.
How long did you live on Front Street? You were born on Maiden Street?
Yeah.
How long did you live there until you were how old?
I don't know, then we moved down.
across from in Aunt Clara's house.
Who's Aunt Clara?
Vivian.
Oh.
Right across from her.
Mrs. Stansmore Vivian.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
Dr. Stansmore Vivian.
Tell us about the Vivians. Prominent name, and they're associated with so many things here.
Vivian?
Typical Cornish.
Uh-huh. Well, doctors were not typical Cornish, according to your characterization.
The spelling was always V-I-V. I-E-N, but the Cornish spelling is V-Y-V.
Oh,
Y-E-N.
I didn't know.
How did they become doctors? I know John Vivian, one of the early Cornish here, yeah, was a doctor. Was this the same family?
Yeah.
And you're out of that tribe?
Well, offshoot of that, the Vivians married into the Neils. Clara Neil married Stansmore Vivian.
Uh-huh. And they had a son, Stanmore, who was a doctor, didn't they?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Neil Vivian is still living.
Is he really? Where's he live?
In California.
Oh.
He's way up in his 90s.
God, this thing. See, how many boys is that there? Two or three?
Three.
Three,
Stansmore,
what was that?
John Vivian was John Tucker's age.
Oh. John and Neil and Stanmore. John was the one I had forgotten. Was he the oldest one?
No, Neil.
Neil was the one.
Was there a Vivian drugstore?
Yeah.
He founded the drugstore.
Mm-hmm. Where I did.
And then Pulford had the other one.
Yeah.
We had three drugstores.
So the Vivians were sort of the medical family for the Cornish, or did they treat everybody under the sun?
Well, I suppose they treated everybody.
Yeah.
The Vivian drugstore,
yeah,
was, well, Ivy, Charlie, yeah, Ivy bought it from,
yeah,
those Vivians.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you went to the barber that you tell about when you're real small, did they do bloodletting?
No.
It had gotten away from them by that time.
Well, I don't know if they ever.
And they had leeches. Well, sure, the barber did that.
Well, yes, but that's back in the dark ages.
Well, yes, I know. You. When did the first automobile come to Mineral Point? Do you remember it?
Oh, 1912. Yeah, I remember that.
Dad had a white Buick.
Did he?
With the two bucket seats, with the gears and everything strapped to the side of it, and the acetylene tank on,
yeah,
one side.
Yeah, that's right, for life.
And like the...
You know what? When we got our first car, if we want to go for a ride, we go out the brewery and get a drink out of the spring and come back home. 1 mile. That was a ride. And if we want to go for a long ride, we go out to the Oak Park Cheese Factory,
yes,
out here.
That was
3 miles. That was a long ride.
Yeah.
Think of it.
And you made your living, though, from,
yes,
renting,
yeah,
cars.
Hearses and ambulances.
What kind of car was your first car?
Maxwell.
Oh, Jack Benny's car.
Still yeah, passing. Yeah, that's right.
Then when did you go from, in your hearse business, from
horses
to vehicles?
Well, it was in the 20s, I guess it was, but I wasn't in the horse, hearse service. Mine was the car, with the car. That would be around very late 20s.
But until that time, they actually, mm-hmm, continued to use horse-drawn funeral coaches and whatnot? Yeah?
No, but I wasn't in that. I wasn't in that horse, and the first hearse business was by somebody else, Audrin Dunn, and then, mm-hmm, I bought him out.
I see.
It was around 1930, right in there, I think.
But you had carriages and horses.
Oh, yes, uh-huh. Father had them.
When did he notice a significant decline in his business in Mineral Point? When did you finally
right
go out?
Right about that time, when they were transferring from horses to cars.
In the 20s?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what did he decide to do then?
What?
What became his business after that?
Well, I continued. I kept renting. God, I kept getting bigger and bigger, so I couldn't stand it anymore. And I was doing all the maintenance work on these three Cadillac coaches, and doing all the washing, polishing. I was the receptionist, the bookkeeper, the whole ball of wax, you know, and keeping my overhead down, I was able to make pretty good.
But your father, when this transformation from horses to automobiles came, what did he just retire? Or
he didn't
go into another line of work?
No, he didn't.
He didn't set up a garage or something of that sort?
No.
Was yours the only livery in town?
Yes. Not the horse livery. There was about three of them. Two Browns, and ours. And Harker's four. Joe Harker.
Now, in the livery business, which you must remember from your boyhood at least, you rented out things.
The undertaker owned the hearse and kept it at our place, and we furnished the driver and the team. That's right.
Okay, but that wasn't your whole business.
No.
Not enough people died to take care of a livery stable.
No, that's right.
But who else rents horses? How does this work?
Their father had a lot of horses to rent out.
Who hired them?
Riding horses, right?
Yeah, riding and driving,
Well, if a salesman came to town, wouldn't a salesman rent a buggy?
Yeah.
A horse from your dad?
Yeah. So when they first started, some guy, a salesman, rented their best horse and buggy and for several days. And then he said to him, I might not be back tonight, but don't worry about it. And he stole the horse and buggy. They never heard tell of it anymore. In those days, the communications was very poor, you know. Couldn't find him.
Well, he's long gone by now.
Yeah, I had a good start on him, you know.
Did you own your own horses when you were a boy, Mr. Neal?
Yes.
Or did you rent for Mr. Penberthy's parents?
I owned, for a Dodge, where we get a dollar and a half ticket
How did you get around?
On the train. I wasn't confined. Get around where you mean, in town here?
Well, if you wanted to go out, you walked.
Oh, you tell about the train trip to Dubuque.
Well, yes, that's nothing.
But I mean, for local trips, say you were going to go work on this. How did you get out to that farm when you went out to work there?
Well, they'd run a horse in the livery stable.
Did Morris Proctor?
No, he just had the Dodgeville.
He just ran the stage from Inter Point to Dodgeville.
Yeah. And I had that too later.
Horse-drawn?
Both. Uh-huh. When the roads were bad, there was no snow removal in those days. I'd have to use a team and Bob.
But you drove them yourself?
Uh-huh.
This team.
I remember one year there was over 100 days sleighing and I never missed a trip.
Between here and Dodgeville?
Uh-huh.
How many passengers would you take on a...
Nine. All the three seats covered wagon, and I was out in the dash, had a board out in front. I could touch either horse or my foot. Loaded both ways all the time. There used to be a traveling man come down from Madison. Toby Tobias, his name was. He always crazy about the girls, you know. And he said, Roy, you got any girls going over this morning? I said, yeah, I have to pick one up on the way out. So he said, put me in the back seat and put her back here with me. I said, okay. And he straightened up himself. He said, how do I look? Well, I said, you look swell, Toby. This lady came out and she had one crutch. You know? I introduced him, you know. And if Luke had killed, I'd have been a dead duck. I tell you. Oh, God, Toby.
Now, you used the bobsled even after automobiles came in?
Yes, oh yes.
Because the roads, mm-hmm. road conditions would require. This continued until when? What was the last year you'd say you used the sled?
Around 25, I think, 1925, right in there.
Oh my, as a kid I can remember the horse-drawn conveyance from the depot uptown.
In Stoughton.
And then I can remember
the first station.
Holy somebody or other, and he got a bus. Oh my, was that something, because you didn't ride in the horse drawn one anymore. Holy, I can't remember his name. Oh, what a privilege to ride in that gas
gas machine.
Yeah.
Well, you must, somebody must have had the transportation from the depot here up
there. We did. We had a
bus. Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah.
You met every train?
Yes, late train night.
And then
10 o'clock at night.
You deposited people at the door?
Yes, uh-huh.
It wasn't just a central place where you dropped them all off and they fended for themselves?
No, no. Now, we had telephone number one for years.
Oh.
And then when they went to dial, I called up the chief officer, Helen Kinsman, you know. I said, "Helen, I'm sick." She said, "What's the matter?" I said, "We're going to lose our telephone number one." And she said, "Well, I'm losing my telephone number. I'm losing my job, too," she said. So I said, "Well, you're in worse shape than I am. I'm not going to complain." Number one.
Excuse me.
Who was the man that did all the street lights with the horse and the buggy, and he got 30, how much did he get a year? $8 a year or something?
I don't know.
Did Kit Day have anything to do with lighting the street lights?
Who?
Kit Day.
I don't know. That isn't the name that I was trying to think of. You mean lighting the arc lights, don't you? Lenny down lighting.
No, the old lights.
Oh. I don't know.
We have a record of that somewhere, of this man that had this.
What did you say it was, the name?
Well, he doesn't know.
Oh.
I don't know. Bob says Kit Day, but I don't remember that either. But some, we've got the story somewhere. The man had the team, or they had a horse and a wagon, a buggy, or a little cart, and went around and did the street lights, all the street lights in town, cleaned the chimneys and filled them. He got, like $8 a year or something. Such a ridiculous price. But I suppose that was, that could have been a part-time job.
Yeah,
well, I hope it was.
Not much to make a living.
Now, when the Neos wanted to take the train, did they just take their bag in hand and walk down there, or did they call them
and call
Mr. Pepper and they kind of pick
them
up?
Yeah, pick up the house and take them to the depot and put them on the train. One time I took a girl to Dodgeville to get a job. And she didn't get a job, so I didn't get no money for the trip. And then a couple of years later, she called up, she wanted to go to the depot, and she had a baby, and she had something to eat in a bag, and she gave me $5 to go and buy her a ticket. And it wasn't enough. I had to put in my own money with it, and I didn't charge her anything for the trip to the depot, or didn't get my a trip that she owed to Dodgeville, you know. God, the poor thing was so alone, you know, with this baby, and I couldn't take anything from her.
But you said you did all right anyway. What did you charge other people too much?
I did pretty good. With the tools I had to work with, I'm pretty good.
And then you bought Cadillac hearses.
Yeah.
When did the drayage to and from the depot finally die out? When did you stop meeting trains?
Oh,
and
gosh, I don't know.
Just when the trains stopped coming in.
Yeah, naturally.
When was that?
I don't remember, do you?
Well, Mitchell used to be baggage man, didn't he?
37,
38. Oh, was that late? Early.
After we came here, you were still.
Was that?
Trains were still. We took the train once from Janesville up here.
Oh.
Daisy picker. Took hours, you know.
We used to call the operator when the late train.
They didn't have steam, and then they'd slow down and chug along, and they'd work up the steam again, and then away. You actually could get out and pick flowers and stuff.
Did you ever take the train, Mr. Penberthy?
Yes. I went to Janesville for the races all the time.
There were races at Janesville?
Yes, uh-huh. Yeah.
What kind of
harness races, standard breed horses.
And is that the kind of horse that interested you most of your life?
No, American saddlebred that I had, gated horses.
You had a riding horse for many years.
Yeah, gated horse. Say, another kid and I went to Darrington Fair one time, and when we were coming out the gate, we bought a big sack of overripe fruit. We pooled our money, you know, and bought this big sack of overripe fruit. We got to the depot and the guy said, "The train's late," so we went uptown to walk around. It wasn't as late as what he said, and we had to run to get the train, you know. And when the train pulled out, we forgot our fruit hid under the platform at the depot. So that was our standing joke all through the year. Now, one of these first days, we have to go down and get our fruit. That was late it was over right when we put it there.
Did you ever go down to the Darlington to see the races at the fair, Mr. Neal?
No.
What did you do for entertainment when you were a boy? He seems to have hidden fruit under depot steps. Were the games you played or things you did?
We used to take our horses down to Darlington, show horses, and we'd be down there all week, and as soon as I got the horses put away, I'd walk to the post office and write my mother a card that we arrived safely. We thought we were a long way from home, 15 miles. Mm-hmm. And she looked forward to getting that card, too.
And how long would it take for that card to get here?
Well, we mailed it to that night, she'd get it the next afternoon.
Now, when you were a lad, Mr. Neal, what were your principal interests in studying or games or whatever?
I suppose I was busy with school and whatever else the kids did.
Were you a great reader?
I read a lot, yes.
Well, you must have gone to the fair every year.
Well, but yes, that's not significant.
Oh, yes, it is.
We had to go to we had to go to Madison to the fair, and we'd went on the train then. I think the fair was 6 cents. And they let us off at the fairgrounds. They had special trains.
Mm-hmm. How long would it take?
20 minutes or so. Wasn't very far, you see. But then I had to sit through all the harness races and whatnot with my grandfather.
He enjoyed those.
In order to see the rest of the fair. And of course, it didn't mean anything to me because I didn't know the drivers or I didn't know the horses or anything.
Mm-hmm. Did you say, Mr. Penberthy, you used to go swimming in that unmentionable pond down there?
Yeah, Piggy Sow and the Copper Bottom. Yeah. You know, I always want to go out and see that creek, but I thought, oh, it's better not because it dwindled to nothing, you know, and it was a real deep creek. When we'd ride under a bridge out on the road going to Darn, our ponies would have to swim. It was that deep. Mm. Yeah. We could all wet, you know, we didn't care. Dry out.
Do you remember Butler's Dam?
Yes.
You do?
Uh-huh. Right out around the bend by the depot there.
Yeah. Didn't they, wasn't there a mill out there?
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, what would be the point of having a dam if they didn't have a mill race?
We used to go skating there.
The Butler's Dam?
Uh-huh. But Badge Minor is right back of our place. Our building is on the site that, where the mansion house was. You know, you've heard of the
mansion. Mm-hmm.
See, Belmont was a territorial capital of Wisconsin then. Mm-hmm. And these legislators all stayed at the mansion house. You should drive back and forth.
Well, we don't have too much tape left, and I do want to make the point that someday we want to get together with, particularly with Edgar, and find out what was done to the insides of the houses, what they looked like inside when you got there, and what transformations have been worked over the years.
Don't make the mistakes that they Historic Building Survey made.
Pardon?
Don't make the mistake. Put windows where there weren't any. And
no, we didn't change things too much.
Well, that'll come at a later time, because that's a big deal and will require drawings and a whole lot of other jazz, I think. But we do want to get on tape, if we can, particularly when we have somebody from town other than you two here, who can comment on this, if you don't mind it. What do you think the general feelings were in Mineral Point when Mr. Hellman and Mr. Neal began transforming these, what was then known principally as an old whorehouse and sort of the slum part of town into something that now the community is quite proud of?
I think a lot of people thought you were kind of crazy to do it. Yeah.
You still do.
That was very definite, and that was unusual for me.
Meaning?
I told him, if it was in Stoughton, I said, I would never get laughed at if I went upon the street. And time and again, they'd look down the nose and laugh and sneer and say, well, how are you doing out on the shake break? And I resented it, of course. Well, of course, I wasn't a native, you see. But there were certain ones, the old druggist and the old man at the hardware store, Mr. Martin, were always very friendly. They never asked it that way. They said, well, how are you doing, or is there something we can do to help you? They were the two outstanding ones. Then the man down at the lumberyard finally went along with us. because we thought we were doing a good job. But for the most part, we didn't have long hair and whiskers, but we were screwball kids, you know.
Did William Kislinberry, what was his attitude? He was in town at the time, wasn't he?
Oh, yes. He didn't want to
come.
He spent
a lot of time.
We hired a carpenter who was such an alcoholic and was so blind that when he saw the board time and time again, very seldom did he ever saw the board on the line. And then nothing ever fit, and we had him about, well, I doubt if he worked a day.
Who was that?
Pre-Jailery.
Oh, Pre-Jailery.
And so I finally told Bob, I said, well, there must be some carpenter in town that we can get.
Close to 6 o'clock. Okay, well.
But when Bill came out to I told him, what, see, we with Pendarvis House, we left the roof line and put up 4x4. Well, we had done this already, put up the 4x4s and simply taken the bad frame out and shoveled out all the filth that was in the back. And so I told Bill, I said, well, now we had to build this back up again. And I said, I'm not enough of a carpenter to structurally to know how to do it. Well, he reluctantly said that he would come out and help us. And so he did come out. Well, what he did for us, we bought from the old zinc furnace, we bought things that almost looked like a storm window, a great large sash. And instead of putting them upright, we put them long ways because the two sash fit exactly in the spot. And so he made the sash for it, or the frames for it. And we used to lift those in and out. We never had any other way of opening it up. And then he finally came in and structurally, then we took up the floors and got his advice about how to do that. And once we got him started, then he was sold on it. We were, see, this was almost like life and death for us. We were gonna do this or else, and without any know-how, and he felt sorry for us, I think. But then he became interested enough to put it back. And then when we bought his house that his grandfather owned, of course, then he was particularly interested. That's what sent him up, and of course he never left us. We had him until he passed away. But we would have never done it without Bill. Bill was very conservative, almost too conservative, but with good know-how. And then when the old stonemason came,
Mr. Kurtz
wanted to contribute a couple of weeks' work, and I apprenticed to him.
Days' work, not weeks' work.
Yes, he wanted to come out and do a couple of weeks' work, he said. Couple of weeks, and we had him for about a year and a half.
He contributed.
Marvelous old man.
Who let him know about your undertaking?
He had retired from Frank Lloyd Wright's and lived down in the old hotel down where the Walker House is now. And he heard about it and he wanted to come out and help. And so, and then from then on in, we had Italian boys. Bob's father, being down at the zinc furnace and being with so many Italian workers down there, he was very sympathetic with the Italians. They were good citizens. And so Bob would know some of the families. We had quite a number of Italian boys to start with. And then over the years, we had some real good kids. Always that help, but always Bill to rely on for, I'd say, well, I want to do it thus and so, I'd have 15 or 20 sketches. And he said, well, you can't do it that way. And I said, well, then can you figure out how we can do it? And so then he'd come on, he said, well, he said, if we do it this way, it'll look about like what you want to do. We made some changes.
Well, we'll ask about the changes later on.
But
then feelings have softened here in town, do you think, over time? But no longer do people laugh at you in the street or when you...
I don't know. This last incident about Pendarvis Street. Surprising people came up to me that I still don't know their names. I've been here for 45 years, and they came up and they said they can't do this to you boys. This historical society can't close that place down. And I wouldn't even know who they were. And it was gratifying for us when we think of all the years that we were sort of ridiculed, you see, and then finally you find out that they realized that we had done a job.
Take 45 years. They say 40, what is it, 40 or 20 years before you come a mineral point.
Came in 1935.
How did you feel about all of this, Mr. Penberthy, over the years?
Well, I thought it was a good thing, but I didn't think they'd ever make it. No, I didn't do that.
It sounds like the encouragement that we got all along the way, Roy.
Where are you going?
Going home.
Yes. No, if you talk to ex-banker Peterson, he can tell you that when I started the row, he said, you never make anything out of that. And I said, give me time and a little money. And I had an awful time getting money from him.
Okay.
If I could just interject, I have some names of descendants.
Okay, you do that.
Well, Abel and William Curry, does that, the Curry family?
K-A-R-N?
C-U-R-R-Y.
Curry. Oh, Curry.
Curry.
Yeah, yes. Cameron Dancy's wife was a Curry.
Then there was a Clyde, James, and Hazel Curry.
Ethel Curry, her name was Ethel Curry.
From Mineral Point.
Yes. Do you know Raymond Waring?
No.
That was their old home.
And then there's a Mary Duback.
No.
And Alda Carvis.
Alda who?
Carvis. These are all descendants of the Carvis family. Well, that doesn't James Carvis. No. Carvis. Now Carvis is. Is one of the lived with Richard Thomas in the Trelawney. So
well, supposedly, but then we've been contradicted on that. We said that Carbis built Trelawney.
Yes,
Carbis and Thomas,
and Richard Thomas.
Uh-huh. I don't know why we were told that that wasn't so several times.
Oh no, that's true.
Yeah, that's. Do you know? Harry and Alice Richardson.
Richardson?
No, not Harry. Spring Green.
In Spring Green, yes.
Yeah, he's the Bert Richardson's funeral director there. I worked for him.
Now, is Bert the a son of that?
Yes. Yeah.
And he's still out there?
Yes.
Ah, well, that's
good
news.
Clue.
Yeah. And another name, Farrell.
Farrell, there's a lot of them.
Yeah. There are. Ebbett or Ray Farrell?
No.
Farrell.
Farrell.
Freeman Farrell. Yeah.
Who were his folks?
Yeah, no.
Uh-huh.
I remember. Will Farrell was his father. Will Farrell?
No. Well, that's
or,
it's a lead.
But you got one.
Yeah, that's important.
You sign these releases for... Jack?
Well, for the Mineral Point Historical Society, that's the...
Let's just do this. Oh, wait a minute. Wait. Sam, which leg comes out? This one?
You better move a chair over here.
Here, wait a minute.
It's this one?
Just a minute.
All right.
Okay. Is this the second book?
Not on this.
Who did that? I think that's part of
and David, that. David brought that up today. He said he wasn't.
David up?
Well, he ran his car into the ditch and he's had a wild time this weekend.
I'll put a chair right behind
him. Sit down, Robert.
Okay, now we didn't leave room here.
I think that's the second series out of Smith.
No, that's not, Mr. Neal. This is the one that he did for the Bicentennial Series. There's one for every state. He was on the, he was the man for Wisconsin. Okay. We've added, if you could sign, well, here, I'll date it up here.
Dan? I don't know.
We need your signature there.
So much stuff that we don't even
on
dream of.
All the forms.
And,
all
these? And
Here's two.
In the room. In the room. But, I mean, some of them are not
This is to deed the tapes to the Mineral Point Historical Society.
And that, that's one weak link we have.
Really?
We just can't find any descendants about the Thomas family.
Okay, I'll check that particularly.
Mm-hmm.
And the gray one.
The gray and the Carbis is also.
Carbis?
Yeah.
Carbis.
It was James and Richard. It was James Carbis and Richard Thomas.
You come across James Carbis
built.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And
okay.
Mr. Neal wants to know whether you found James Carvis's picture in the Mineral Points.
Bob.
I wrote it on the back of it.
Come on. Well, all right.
Okay.
I have
Still recording.
I have the Pendarvis pictures and I'll.